so welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast where we discuss sci-fi TV and film that feature actors, directors, and writers of color. I'm Maggie.
And I'm Melissa. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr as SF in Color.
Yay, we got through a whole intro without screwing up. Woohoo!
Oh, we're great.
We are. Okay, so...
How long did it take
for us to say the intro? Oh, correctly? Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? Oh my god, has it been that long?
The time flies when you're having fun.
Aw. So today, we are talking about episode 3 of Sense8.
Smart money is on the skinny bitch.
Probably gonna have to bleep part of that out. Or the skinny bee.
The skinny bee. Okay, fine.
The bee. Sorry. I mean, whatever.
Whatever.
You know what we mean. But yeah, episode 3. So I royally screwed this up last week when we were supposed to record, because I watched episode 4, and I totally skipped episode 3.
Oops.
But the funny thing was, the show still made sense, even though I skipped episode 3.
That's a unique characteristic of this show, I think. Because things happen, so, you know, you jump around from person to person.
Right.
And
right.
Things happen in a way that is meant to be confusing. Uh-huh. So, I get it. I mean, it was kind of silly, but I get it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it was funny because I made predictions in episode 4 while I was watching. That actually happened in episode 3, so that was awkward. but yeah, just again, as with all our episodes, we will be talking about spoilers for episode 3. So, make sure you watch the show before you listen to us. Or if you don't care about spoilers, I guess you can listen to us.
Yeah,
you
know, whatever.
Whatever floats your boat.
do a floats your boat.
Okay. So, you know, I was thinking when I was watching the intro for the third time, because I don't know, I actually do like watching the intros, even the same thing, and it's really long.
Okay.
I have to brag about this.
Okay.
So, the one when they're passing over London, number one, they actually reused that shot later in that episode, so I kind of laughed. And then number two, in that London shot where you see the one of the bridges, I think it's the Tower of London specifically in front, and you see all those London landmarks, in the middle of the screen, there's like this like skinny little tower with a glowing top.
Okay. Right?
I don't know if you remember this. You probably are only going to recognize this if you watch it carefully. But I used to live near that tower.
Oh.
Like, I would walk past it not every day. I'd walk past it like twice a week to go to my classes. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I could say, I mean, that's so cool that I'm watching a TV show and I'm like, hey, I used to see that tower right from my, like, living room window? Yeah, living room window. I was like, I feel so cool now.
That's anyway, pretty cool.
I like bragging about my London exploits.
What did you think of the episode itself, just in general? I think things started making a lot more sense for you.
Well, again, I watched things backwards, so it was a little awkward, but I, basically by the end of it, I was just like, oh my gosh, my heart was racing because of all the fight scenes that just had happened, and I felt really unfulfilled, and I know, you know, this is a kind of show where it's meant to be binge-watched, it really is. I just hadn't, there was no, at least for this episode, there was no feeling of closure for me. It just, like, I finished watching it at, like, 11 at night. My heart was racing with adrenaline from all the fight scenes. And I was like, wait, that's it? But I already know what happens next! No!
That's actually kind of funny.
It was really, really funny. And when it opened, again, because I had watched, the order I watched it in was episodes 1, 2, 4, 3. I forgot what happened in episode 2. And I was just like, oh, shoot. Wait. Oh, yeah. He was in the car crash. And this happened. Oh, okay. Like, I was, like, trying to piece everything together because I forgot stuff.
I did that once, too.
You watched it in the wrong order?
Yeah, I watched an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in the wrong order. It actually didn't matter. It was season four, and it was episode one and two, I think I switched.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not right. Episodes two and three, I switched.
Okay.
So, it was very confusing, but it wasn't confusing enough to stop watching. So, I ended up watching the whole thing, and to this day, when I watched that episode that I skipped, I still get confused because I don't know what to do with it in my brain.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, I know my sister once, I tried to get her into Harry Potter back in the day, and I wasn't even, like, ever a hardcore Harry Potter fan, but I was like, oh, you should read the series, it's really good. And she started with book four. I was like, no, no, you stop that. You stop that right now. You go to book one. You started book one. Why are you starting at book four? She started with Goblet of Fire. Like,
that's
what the
blasphemy.
Heck? Right? I would have all the books to start with. Like,
wait, four. What's wrong with number four, though?
No, no, it just doesn't make sense, because the number four is, like, the Triwizard Tournament. Like, yeah. Why would you start with that? That's, like, complete, the format of that book is completely different from the other books.
That's true.
Because of that whole Triwizard thing.
Yeah.
It's not, like, your normal, I mean, it was never really your normal boarding school story anyway, but you know what I mean. Like, yeah. It's not, it doesn't fit the format of most of the books. But anyway,
Sensei.
So, okay. Going back to Sensate, my first note is about Riley, but I don't know if anything happened before that that you want to discuss.
Yeah, so we open with the scientist guy, who at this point we don't really know that much about.
The scientist guy?
Whispers? And I don't know if we've named him yet.
Oh, yeah, I don't know his name. Oh, right, right, now I'm remembering. Okay, got you. Because I was like, I know something happened before Riley, but I can't remember what it is. Yeah, that's when he's cutting the head, right?
Yeah, and there's a little girl who is saying to a little boy, don't look at him, that's how he caught me. And that's how
that
we open.
That is disturbing. Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know what I was expecting when I saw him cutting someone's head. I guess we should all know you're gonna see a brain, like, that's what you're gonna see, but I was still staring in horror and going, what if it's something else? But no, it was a disgusting-looking brain, and I was like, okay, let's move on. I guess, it looks like Will, later in the episode, is investigating this case with the girl who's gone missing, because Will's the one who has a dream, because he wakes up in the hospital after being informed that he wakes up in the hospital and is informed that he was in a car crash, right? And he helped capture Jonas. And then, his name is Jonas, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because I know, one time I wrote down his name is Julian, and I don't know why.
Okay. Well, think of him as, anyway, like a Jonas brother. The last Jonas brother.
Yeah. So, I guess I'm a little confused right now because I thought they could only access people, like, I'm trying to make sense of that memory or transference or astral projection or whatever, because I don't know if it's happening in the past or the present.
Which one?
Because of the nature. When Will is dreaming or whatever-ing about the girl who gets... Yeah. Caught by evil science guy, and her head is cut open, presumably. I'm just trying to figure out, like, is that happening right now? Like, in the story's present? Or did that happen in the past? But we haven't... I don't think we've seen anything happen in the past. That's right, that's what I thought. I was like, it must be a past event, but then we haven't seen any, you know, like, transference or anything with people accessing past memories of other people. Do you know what I mean?
But when it happened, it wasn't the past.
Wasn't the past.
It's the past for us, but it's not... When it happened, it was the present for Will. That's my understanding.
It also confused me because... It looked like Will was a little boy in that scene. So, I was like, oh, was this some kind of past a case? But when he looked through the case file later in the episode, it didn't have a particular year on the case file, I don't think.
Well,
or did it? Did it say 19-something?
I don't remember if it had a year, but I think it's probably, it'd be safer for the show not to have a year and then just kind of leave it a little looser. Oh, but
sure, but even if it said 19-something instead of 20-something.
I don't know. I don't remember. We can go back into the scene and look. But yeah. It's my understanding that it happened a long time ago.
Okay, because that's what I thought too. But I was like, how can she reach out to the future, Will?
But she's you not. Know? She's reaching out to the past, Will.
Okay, I guess that makes sense. Okay, yeah. That's what confused me, because I was like, who is this little boy? I was like, is this little boy... Because he was in shadow, and I was like, is that... I thought it was, like, Jonas or something, and he transferred his memory to Will. But now I understand that, no, that was, like Will's past or something.
Yeah.
Right. Sorry for the confusion. I was still trying to wrap my head around that, and I didn't quite understand. Maybe if I had gone from episode 2 to episode 3, maybe it would have been a little bit smoother. But anyway... Okay, so we're clear on that. That was Will in the past had this connection with this girl who was killed by the scientist guy or whatever.
And so we're getting a little bit more about his trauma. So, like, think of it like this way. Like, every character has a trauma. It's a secret hidden backstory that we have to watch to unlock. Because yeah. Everyone's lives... are more exciting than regular human lives, you know?
Yeah.
So each person gets their own special moment, let's just say. Okay, so
I understand this now.
Like, this is his special moment.
That's like Rorschach from Watchmen level stuff, like, right there, that flashback. I was like, yo, if I saw that if I was a kid, yeah, we'd be done. Like, to paraphrase that guy that Riley meets up with later in the episode, like, basically the world is crazy and checking out is understandable. Like, if I saw someone's head getting sliced open that way, like, Sylar style, we'd be out.
Like, yeah, I'd just be like, no.
I'm good.
Sylar style.
I was thinking Sylar when I saw that happening. I mean, he had a knife and not, you know, telekinesis or whatever he was using, but, like, yeah, it was not good. But, oh yeah, one quick note about Will that I wish I could have mentioned in the last episode of the Sensate 2 that you were talking about. Did you recognize Will's father?
No.
In anything?
I don't think so.
Okay, because he's been in some other movies. The actor's, his last name is this longer Italian name that everyone shortens to Pants. So, like, I guess his stage name is, like, Joey Pants or something. But he's been in Memento, and he's also been in The Matrix. Ah. But he's more of a bigger character in Memento.
I never actually saw Memento.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's where I recognize, because when I saw the close-ups of his face in the second episode, I was just like, you look so familiar. Who are you? And then I look him up, and he's like, oh, you're the crazy guy in Memento. I mean, there's many crazy guys in Memento, but not the main crazy guy.
The other crazy guy.
Like, Teddy. I think he plays Teddy in Memento.
I'll have to take your word
like
for that.
Who is, absolute scumbag creep. And then he plays some kind of side character in The Matrix. Like, he's not, like, a super big character in The Matrix movie. At least not the first one. But I was like, oh, I see you. It's so weird. Like, I'm starting to notice after going through all these TV shows and movies, like, people who do sci-fi, like, they stay in sci-fi. Like, they're just reused over and over in different series and, you know, seasons and different shows. Like, I mean, we already see that Freema Agamon is in this show and in Doctor Who. And, you know, people just stick in the same circles, I guess.
No, that's super. That's just absolutely true. Like, there are, you have a handful of actors and actresses who just kind of just circle through, like, sci-fi type TV shows.
Right, yeah.
Like, And not even, like, people that we've seen in Sense8. I'm just, like, talking regular, you know, classic TV shows. And they're just always absolutely. There. And, you know, sometimes they're not even, like, regular week-to-week people. They're just, they pop in for a yeah. guest, like, you know, they show up and then they bounce and then...
Russell Tovey, I mean, yeah. he's in everything, especially sci-fi stuff, like, or fantasy stuff. Like, he's in Being Human, he's in, like, well, Sherlock's not really sci-fi or fantasy, but, like...
It's in the same circle, I think.
Well, he's, like, the BBC circle. But, yeah, like, just, like, the other week, I don't know if I told you this, I think I might have posted this to your Facebook, but I realized that the guy who plays Tendo in Pacific Rim was in the Star Trek movie. And not even as, like, a minor character. He was, like... Like, the like the villain's, like, second in command. And I was, like, do you remember Star Trek 2009 at all?
No matter how many times I see it, I don't really. Sorry. But,
like, you know how Eric Bana plays the villain in Star, yeah, in the Star Trek movie? Not the first, 13th, whatever. It's the guy under him. It's
I mean, his, I understand like, what the second in command means, but I don't remember him.
Yeah, but I was just like, oh my god, I can't believe that was him. This is blowing my mind. Like, I was like, I didn't realize that Clifton Collins Jr. was like a sci-fi fixture, I guess. But it's always weird how these things work out, so yeah. whatever.
Anyway.
I guess, you know. Anyway,
back to Sense8. Back to Will. Okay. So he wakes up in the hospital. He was just in the car crash, and he actually caught Jonas. OMG. You did OMG. Not predict that.
Yeah.
But then you watched it out of order, so we can't even discuss it. Sad.
Well, no, we can't discuss it. I mean, I do remember him crashing the car, like, so he could stop Jonas. But, like, did he call for backup? Because I don't remember that part.
No.
How did that happen, then? They were both, they both crashed, and then when first responders arrived, the police also came and they cuffed Jonas. Is that what happened? Because
I imagine. They probably were both unconscious.
Yeah, we don't get, like, clarification on, like, what exactly went down.
Yeah.
But that's exciting. I'm glad, like, they didn't take the easy, not the easy route, but, like, they didn't let Jonas get away. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That would have, I think it's more interesting that he is... that Jonas is in a position where he's, like, locked up and, like, I guess would need saving or something.
Yeah.
So. This kind of reminds me a little bit of The Matrix where, like, you know Orpheus is going to get away no matter what. Or, not Orpheus. Is it Morpheus? Whatever.
It's been Lawrence a long Fishburne. Time since I watched The
Lawrence,
Matrix.
Lawrence Fishburne's character or, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
The head guy who's, like, red pill, blue pill. Like, he gets away with pretty much everything. Like, he's, like, guiding Neo through, whatever his office, and, I mean, he's not really ever in any danger, but at least, like, I think it's more interesting when Jonas, who, we're not really sure if he's a good guy, but, like, I think, in terms of the viewer, we're definitely we're more on Jonas's side than, like, creepy scientist brain-splitting guy's side, so...
I think that's a good call on your part.
It's a good call. You know, just a speculation.
I mean, he's also just, like, he gives us a lot of information, and so we just feel grateful to him. Because he starts explaining things, and that's more in the fourth episode, but he gives answers that we have been looking for, and I think that just makes us happy towards him anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll talk about this in the next Sense8 episode, but there's definitely a decidedly very anti-authority message running throughout this. But yeah, so that's what's going on with Will in the beginning. He leaves the hospital.
Like people do in the media.
In every freaking TV show.
That, like, stop. Can we stop perpetuating this? Like, this happens. I think it's... All
especially
the time.
Since, like, freaking Nomi is, like, strapped in.
And she can't leave. But...
Well, yeah, like, she's the more... I mean, I think, realistically, people are hopefully not being strapped in to hospital beds. But, like, there's, like, that middle ground where, like, you actually need clearance from the doctor and need to sign out and do this and that. Like, you're just telling me this doctor just, this police officer just, like, ripped the IV out of his arm and just walked away? Like, okay.
I'm so sick of people in TV ripping the IV out. I'm just, stop it. No. That's just, stop doing it.
Ugh. So, but I guess, like,
I get it. No one
wants to see someone checking out of a hospital.
I know, but, like,
who wants to see that? That takes forever.
But, like, it doesn't show, like, oh, I'm in such a hurry, I have to get out of the hospital. To me, it just shows recklessness.
I'm like, dang, if Will can do that, I wish Nomi could do the same thing, because she'd be like, all right, I'm going, bye.
Bye.
Like, bye.
Yeah, so Will wants to go talk to Jonas, but he is in Homeland Security's hands. Thanks, Homeland Security. Great job.
So, yeah, he talks to the dude, and then he starts going through the files of the old case, right?
Right, Sarah Petrell. Okay. It's actually somewhat funny. I think I mentioned this, I think, last week. But I've seen the show before. I don't remember Will's storyline much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Sarah Petrell, like, that's his trauma or whatever. But,
okay. You
know, that's something that he needs to discover. And, like, that's a lot of what is, you know, something that he has to do. That's, like, mm-hmm. his purpose or whatever in Sense8, kind of. And okay. I just don't remember it. Like, I remember everyone else's stuff.
It's not as riveting.
It's really not.
Also, because we're so used to the police procedural thing, like, it's all just old hat by now. Yeah. You know what I mean? We've all seen police procedurals. Everyone knows how Law and Order goes. Like, come on. Of course he's going to get justice or something even more tragic is going to happen. Like, we know the basic
formula
story.
Yeah.
There's no other way. Like, you know, like, we knew he was going to save the gangbanger. Like, it's also formulaic.
Yeah.
He's just Mr. Bland white guy, honestly.
That's actually true. He doesn't have much to do, even though he's kind of the main character.
He has skills that other people need, though.
No, yeah, it's he's helpful. And I think when you compare him into the main plot itself, like, mm-hmm. that's when I remember his contributions. But when he's just by himself in, where is he again? Somewhere.
Chicago?
Yeah, I knew some Midwestern city. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. They keep pointing at, like, there's, like, a little focus on the Illinois license plates and, you know, the little patch on his shirt to remind you if you forget where you are.
Okay.
So this is going to sound really narcissistic, so I apologize. But every time they cut to San Francisco, I kept thinking they were in New York. It was so bad. Because not trope per se, but, like, I feel like 50%, maybe 75% of American TV shows or movies are either set in LA or New York, or both LA and New York. So, like, if I see another city that looks vaguely New Yorkish, I just think it's New York. But so it took me maybe a couple episodes to be like, oh, I keep forgetting they're in San Francisco, even though they literally show the Golden Gate Bridge in the very beginning of the intro credits. Wow. Okay. Like, so
that's a classic New York attitude.
What?
They think they're the center of the universe.
Yeah, no, I know that's such a TV or New York centric thing to be like, it's only us in California and, like, maybe Texas.
Maybe.
and, like, maybe Texas. But, yeah. So, yeah, we're in Chicago. Will's not too important in this story.
Yeah, we can move on from him because I honestly don't have anything else. He's just
Yeah,
there.
I think that was it. I mean, they were intercutting his little search for the truth with
Sun's yeah.
search for, like, I guess the money records and things like that.
So do you want to go into her?
Yeah. Let's talk about her. She had a lot more to do in this episode.
Yeah.
Yes. So she starts off with, I believe,
well, the
Mr. Zhang, or yeah. Zhang, who keeps calling
yeah,
her.
Yeah, she keeps getting phone calls, and this, I don't remember, if, I don't know if you remember this, but she's, like, sitting in front of this window, mm-hmm. and she's leaning against the desk, and I don't know why, she just looks, like, such a badass. Like, she's wearing...
She always
well,
does.
She always does. But she's, like, wearing, like, dark colors, and she's completely in shadow, and, like, the outside is, like, completely white. And it's just, like, yeah. it looks so cool, and it looks awesome, and I just kind of love her.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of focus on how dirty the windows were.
That,
but...
too. But I feel like it added to the effect. I don't know, because, like, the sky was white, and the buildings were kind of whitish, and I liked yeah. how it looked.
No, like... I really do like how every person's, like, world has a very different feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So when you switch to a new country or a different sensate, you more or less know where you are before you even see the person. Mm-hmm. Like, that shot where she's in the cab, right? So before yeah. we see her in the cab, we see, like a city
right.
kind of scene. I immediately knew it was, like, Seoul. You know what I mean? Like, because none of the other characters live in a place that looks like that.
Right.
Does that make sense? It's like the Inception trick. Like, if you've ever watched Inception, they have three layers of the dream, and each layer has a different color scheme. This one is not at... Sensei's not as, you know, color scheme-y about it, but there's definitely... distinguishing, you know, characteristics about every person's world.
Yeah, and they're also using their own settings to their advantage, because they did film yeah. all over the world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, obviously all over the world is very different, and so I think they're really utilizing that.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, the scope of filming is pretty wide. On the show, a lot yeah. wider than you would usually get.
Oh, for sure.
And it's you know, it's unbelievably complicated because, you know, characters are, you know, switching and going back and forth.
It must have been, like, really difficult to, like, have that, like, shooting schedule, flying all these people all over the place. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out the logistics of it in my head, and, like, I can't even, like, right now.
I mean, it requires, like, so much planning, honestly,
yeah.
because, I mean, I'm sure, you know, it's all written already, and so they can just take people as they need them into the different scenes, but I'm sure it was filled completely out of order, and...
Oh, yeah, no one, like, who films things in
well,
order?
No, not, like, but, like, not just...
Yeah, you know?
I feel like more than... typical movies, TV shows mm-hmm. are closer to filmed kind of in order.
Yeah, because of their, like, episodic kind
right,
of
exactly. But,
content.
I mean, maybe because it's Netflix and whatever, but this...
They got that budget, man.
Yes, yeah, so it was not...
Oh, Lord.
You know, they went city by city rather than
yeah.
episode by episode.
I think that's the thing that they probably did.
Right.
Because it doesn't make sense for them to keep hopping around from different
no,
cities.
No, but, like...
Over and over again.
It just, you know, they had to move everything to these different cities, and, you know, it's 8 completely different locations, and...
Yeah.
It's impressive.
It is very impressive. I'm definitely interested in learning more about, like, the process that, like, while they were filming and all that. Mm-hmm. I'm, again, staggering how they did that. Like, because you can see it. It looks great.
It pays off completely.
And it does pay off. Because if you tried to just do everything in a sound studio in, like, L.A. or something, it would not look as fantastic, you know?
No.
So, absolutely, much kudos to the Wachowskis for, you know, getting this done. Because it looks amazing.
Yes.
So, yeah, back to Sunbach.
Yeah,
so,
she's opening the safe, and we get that yes. intercut with Will. And they're both looking at folders and mm-hmm. discovering their pasts. And I don't know
is
about...
Is it really Sunbach's past, though? I mean, I know she has a flashback.
Yeah, she has a flashback. I mean, it's not really a discovery for her. It's a discovery for us. But, you know, we get the two of them thinking about their pasts then. But I don't know about you, but that sequence with the two folders was, like, so long.
Oh, yeah.
They were just staring. Like, I get it. You're reading.
Like, halfway through, I was like, you really can't make a searching through folders scene exciting. I mean, the only thing you can do is make it short, and they're not doing
that. They are definitely not doing that. It was so long. We get it. You're discovering, you're looking, you're searching, you're reading, you're thinking. We get it, okay?
I mean, this episode got more exciting towards the end, so it all worked out, I guess.
That's true. You know what I mean?
We have the boring folder searches, but then we have, like, awesome, exciting fight scenes, so...
It all comes back in the end.
Yes. So after she looks at these files,
she gets a flashback.
Gets a flashback,
yes. To her mother, who says, take care of your brother. That's gonna go well.
Younger siblings are the worst. You always have to take care of them.
Yeah.
Even when they don't want to be taken care of, aka Sunbox style.
Yeah. Ugh.
I'm just thinking about next episode, man.
Anyway.
So,
she's trying to get the attention of her father, who is ignoring her. So she goes to leave a message with the secretary.
Or should we say the front desk?
Whatever, yeah.
So that was awesome.
She punches the desk like a freaking boss, and I think that's kind of when I fell in love. Just a little bit.
Yeah, no, she was great. That desk moment, that was wonderful. And, like, I love how, like, the receptionist just gasps and she just walks away, like, whatever.
What you gonna do about it?
Right? Get a new desk, I guess. I guess that's one way to get your dad's attention. Oh, you have to buy a new desk for the front office because your daughter smashed it?
Hulk style.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah, I'm really pissed on her behalf on the way her dad's acting towards her, but... I guess that's when you become a secret prize fighter in the middle of the night, I guess. I don't know.
Like, yeah. I think that's a good way to handle it.
Toph from Avatar level-ish right there.
That's so true.
Like, please. Like, I was like, this is just like Toph. Just like Toph. So... She keeps trying to avoid... Well, yeah, like, everyone's like, oh, the authorities are gonna come... She keeps avoiding this guy's call. It is really bad. When I saw the last name Jong, or I just wrote down Ken Jong? Can you imagine she picked up the phone and was like, hey, this is Ken Jong. Like, I'm sorry. Complete random aside. But, there's like, what, three really popular Korean names and all the rest are like really obscure. And Jong is one of the obscure ones. So I was just like, my mind just immediately went to Ken Jong. Anyway, do you have any notes about the fight scene that she's involved in?
Well, how about this? This is what I propose. Save the intercut ending scene for the end of the podcast so we can discuss it at the same time as we discuss how it affects Caphias.
Okay, yes.
So, the last... really piece of Sunbok is she goes Toph style to go fight, and her coach, I think, he's like, you always come back.
She always comes back.
Like, I can imagine her, like, you know, like a young professional, like, you know, 20 something years old, and she's like, yeah, I think I'm giving this up, it's not mature anymore or whatever, and I can just imagine the coach is like, no, you're back, you're gonna definitely come back. Like, I can imagine her doing this for like a very long time.
She was great. I mean, you could totally understand her being in her position. She needs an outlet for all this anger and insanity, and, you know, And I'm glad she has that outlet. It was like some, like, Mean Girls, Regina George, like, you need sports as an outlet kind of, like, level of craziness right there. But yeah, like, I'd be mad as heck if, like, I was in, like, her shoes and, like, her brother was, like, doing all this sketchy stuff and, like, her dad wasn't listening to her. Like, oh my gosh. Because I know, like, we talk, I think it's, I don't know if it was mentioned in the previous episode, but, like, the fact that her father basically doesn't acknowledge that she exists, like,
yeah,
in terms of the company. And, like, I don't even think people, like, it really was apparent to me watching this time around, like, people really don't know that she's his daughter. Like, it's just so bizarre.
Yeah.
And it's just so, like, such a strange choice to me. Yeah. Like, out of all the characters, she's, like, the angriest one. Of that, there's no doubt. And for every reason, like, she has every reason to be angry. And yeah, the kickboxing, she was so good. I just think, like, her fighting style says so much about how she carries herself and how she is as a person, right? Like,
yeah.
Wait, like, in that very beginning of her little, like, fight with the other kickboxer, like, he's making all these moves and she's just kind of waiting and analyzing and then reacting to it. You know?
Yeah.
Well, I think we can come back to her later, right?
Yeah. So let's go to somebody we pretty much get nothing from. How Kala? About? Yeah, exactly. Kala.
Yeah, she gets, like, one scene where she comes into the meeting and her friend makes a very weird joke about being lobotomized, which is really disturbing when you think about what's going on with Nomi and... that girl who gets her head cut off, like, Jesus.
No, like, I absolutely love how all of the plots are somehow tying together. It's like, you know, like, when you learn something at school in one of your classes, and all of a sudden, it is relevant to a different class, and all of a sudden, it seems like the whole world is combining, and everything makes sense. I don't know if, like, I feel like that happens.
No, I totally understand.
I feel like sometimes schools plan that on purpose, and sometimes they don't. Oh, sure. But, you know, kind of, everything's interwoven. So, like, even though this is a really short scene, we do get her showing up at this meeting, and her wedding is in 2 days, and so there's a reference to getting lobotomized, like Nomi. And what they're talking about is they're learning about fake drugs.
Right, and that leads into
Caffius. Right, who is having issues with getting his mother real drugs instead of the fake stuff they're selling.
Right.
Everywhere.
Yeah, no, that was a very, like, nice way to tie all those scenes together. And then also reinforce that she is really not feeling this wedding. Like,
heck yeah.
At all.
I don't know, like, if I was, like, her fiancé is, like, perfect. Like, we've talked about this. Like, he is perfect.
I don't think he's perfect. At least, I don't think he's perfect once we get to the next episode.
Well, okay, up to this point, he is perfect.
Up to this point, yeah.
He is,
yeah,
like...
Yeah.
Perfect fiance. And, like, the only thing is she is horrible at hiding her true feelings. I, like...
Are you... Yeah, right? I'm surprised he doesn't pick up on this. Or maybe he did. I know he did address it, but, like, he just doesn't care. And I'm like...
Basically.
That's what gets me.
Yeah, like, because he knows that she's not feeling it. And he acknowledges it in the previous episode, I believe. And...
Right.
I'm so confused because she is not trying to hide her disgust and he doesn't even seem to acknowledge it anymore. He's just like...
I know. It's so... That's what makes me go, he's not a perfect person or a perfect husband or whatever because he's being... Like, he clearly does not care that she's very uncomfortable and doesn't really want this. Like, that's what makes you go, yeah, there's something up with this guy, and things do not get better as the episodes go on for me. So I'm just like, okay.
It's only beginning, honey.
I know that. And then we don't get too much of Wolfgang in this episode, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think we even see Wolfgang.
Oh, at all?
I don't have any notes from him. We probably get, like, a cut of him at some point, like, in music or a montage, but... Nothing happens with him. Nothing.
Yeah. I was like, did I write down any notes about Wolfgang? But no.
Nope.
Not at all.
That's what sometimes happens. Like, we get nothing from people.
I was expecting at least, like, one little scene, kind of like how they had that one little scene with Kala. But
yeah, we don't get
I guess not.
Anything. But you know, we'll get him later. And it all, I don't, I wonder, right. at the end of the show, I'd love to look down at kind of the breakdowns of, like,
right.
Who gets how much screen time.
Airtime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe we can look at that later. I don't know if that exists, but hopefully
it does.
I'm
sure someone's done a breakdown. I mean, this particular season has been around for a while, so.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's something around. But, yeah, I mean, I think this might actually be the first episode of Sense8 that doesn't have a sex scene in it. So.
Good job. That's interesting.
Good job, I guess. Yeah. So, do we want to move on to Riley? Do we want to move on to Riley?
Sure.
Yeah, Riley. I don't know if you have any more notes about anyone.
Hmm? What?
Okay, yeah, let's move on to Riley. So she is walking down this white hallway, which is in the subway tube, whatever, station in
right.
London. I was trying to figure out where she was. I mean, they showed a bunch of, like, tube lines that were intersecting, but I was like, I've never been in a tube line that was that white and that clean before. although I must say they have the best subway system probably that I've been on that's outside of Asia. So, but yeah, that's how they do it. It's really interesting. Like, I know she gave a ton of her money to the blind pianist.
Right.
And I guess she was trying to be pragmatic and get rid of the money. And then also, there was, like, the nostalgia factor because she missed her father who played piano.
Right.
And all that. And I was just thinking, you know, it's really funny how they do it, how, like, their system's set up for, I guess, busking in the tube, because they don't let people, like, perform or, like, or beg or do any of that on the train.
Mm-hmm.
But you have designated places, like, in the subway or tube halls that you can perform or whatever. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but the pianist guy, he was, like, in this little circle that was in a corner. Like, there's literally, like, a circle
yeah.
or a thing drawn on the floor. Like, that's designated for people to, like, perform or play or whatever. So that was, like, I don't know. I really liked the subway because it was, like, nice and chill. You don't have to worry about, like, literally, like, if you look at the New York subway system, oh, gosh. There's always people, like, on the subways, you know, busking and doing stuff. But, hey, when you're in London, I guess you have to pay a lot more to take the train, but at least there's people in the hallways instead. I don't know. It's weird. But, yeah, she drops off her money.
And then
throws a bunch in the trash, I guess.
Hmm?
She throws a bunch of it in the trash, too. The trash bin next to the blind guy. Doesn't she throw money in there as well? Or was that something else?
I thought that was just, like, the rest of the bag. I honestly don't remember.
Oh, I thought she dumped some more money in there too, but
I don't remember.
Yeah. So after she leaves the tube, she meets up with her friend, who's randomly with this Australian girl named Brandy.
Yeah.
Did I skip something?
No. I was just thinking about it. It's a weird relationship interplay between the three of them.
Yeah.
Because she knows him. They go way back, I guess.
What's his name again? Because I don't remember his name.
I have no idea. I just refer to
him
as old friend.
Okay.
And then his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Who, she doesn't have Asperger's. She's Australian.
It was just so, I, like, what?
Like,
I've never heard that stereotype before.
Her personality.
That Australians are really, I guess, blunt?
Blunt.
That's a thing?
Yeah,
when was that ever an Australian stereotype? I guess it, okay.
I'm not sure, but I just found, like, her entire personality can be summed up in that one phrase. Like,
I'm Australian?
Basically, like, I feel like that's the kind of thing that she says to everyone.
Oh, God, yeah. It was so random, I guess, was what I would say about that character. She came out of nowhere. I didn't really understand what she was going on, but...
Yeah, I don't know why she was important, I guess. I guess the only thing mm-hmm. that we really got out of her is she had to be a little nosy into Riley's past so we could get a little bit more about her.
Yeah, it helped kind of move the plot along a little bit faster, I guess.
Yeah, And I guess there wouldn't really be a reason for her friend to start talking about it. Right. And, you know, her bluntness is appreciated because she can dig into someone's past without any consequences or repercussions because yeah. She's Australian.
And also, it's not like Riley's going to fight this girl. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Riley's such a, like, a, not soft-spoken per se, but, like...
Yeah.
He's not really much of a fighter, so, like, she's no sunbox. Yeah. So, you know. Actually, it's really funny how that works out, like, because they both have that short hair, but, like, just, like, the way they look physically, like, Sunbox has that whole black, like, nicely cut, professional right. kind of... air, and then, like, Riley's just, like, DJ with, like, wild, like, white hair, who's, like, very, like, soft-spoken. Sunbox is, like, always ready to throw down, like, no matter what. But anyway, yeah. So, she goes and hangs out at her friend's flat, and they talk about, like, depression and life and stuff.
Basically. And there are two reasons, apparently, to visit Iceland. Do you remember what they are?
Riley Blue and the Aurora Borealis.
Indeed. That is, yeah. It was just, I don't know. I found that really weird.
I'm kind of over everyone, like, being like, Riley is the best DJ ever, oh my god. Like, I was kind of over it by, like, episode one. Like,
I agree.
Great. I literally don't care. And I also don't agree. Like, if they actually made a better effort to get better music and, like, I don't know. It's like that show don't tell thing. We see her do one DJ set, which in my personal opinion was kind of lame. We see her do one DJ set, and that's all. Every other thing is like she's moping around, listening to music on her iPod, running away from crazy people. Like, show don't tell, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. But I guess if there's a really good DJ, I don't know if I would know that. I'm not professional DJ judge listener thing.
I'm not gonna pretend like I'm qualified either to judge, but based on my own personal experience and seeing her DJ set in the first episode, I was like, okay, I'm not sure why everyone's like, that is the best DJ set I've ever seen in my life, my mind was blown. Like, okay,
calm yourself. So Riley misses her dad, yeah. And yes. She misses the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when we learn that people don't try and kill themselves in the winter. They kill themselves in the spring.
In that particular country.
Yeah, when the sun comes back and everyone's crazy. And then our Australian friend goes, is that when you tried? Sorry, love, Australian.
What? What a cop out!
You can't.
I'm gonna say this really sensitive thing, and then follow it up by saying, "Oh, but I'm Australian, so it's okay."
Like, stop it! Ugh. Take responsibility for what you say, woman.
Right? Jesus, that's like anytime someone says "no offense, but," and you know they're gonna say something really offensive. Brandy. But yeah, she says that, and then she's like, doesn't say anything, which means yes. And then her friend shows these scars, these tattoos, rather, where it's like, I got one every time someone said I'm lucky to be alive. I was like, okay. And then he has this little existential, like, you know, this world is so screwed up. And, I mean, the only logical thing would be to want to check out temporarily or permanently every once in a while. So yeah, I guess it gets kind of towards the theme of mass government conspiracy craziness afoot.
Let me yell and shake my fist at the sky.
Yeah, right? So she's holed up in this apartment. I actually quite like the lighting in this apartment. Like, all these, like, candles scattered around. Like, there's some crazy gothic... I don't know. It's, like, kind of... I don't know if gothic is the right word. But there's just something about it that was very reminiscent. You know, like, I mean, just, like, that whole brooding artist, let me live in a
Yeah.
Apartment cave filled with candles and be depressed and stuff. Like,
they definitely got that covered.
It had that, like, almost, like, romantic vibe. And by romantic, I mean, like, the English romantics, like, literature-y stuff. Yeah. Where it's like, look at me, I'm so dark and brooding and existential and stuff.
I'm pretty sure that's how they judged art back then. Like, the darker and more brooding it was, the better it was. That's just how it is.
But yeah, I mean, everyone knows there's the old trope of, like, the insane artist or the depressed artist. And how creativity is linked to mental disorders.
You know, like, these people on the fringes of society are the ones who can truly see what society is and what human nature is. That they have the best way to look into that.
Yeah. And then, you know, the fact that, oh, if you think differently, you are creating more interesting and more deeper kind of pieces of art or music or whatever. So, yeah, I know she very much fits that, like, mad artist or whatever, depressed artist stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that, like, that stereotype and that, like, kind of connection between, like, mental illness or whatever, things like that. I mean, I'm not saying she's ill, but I mean, clearly if you have... She's suicidal. She's been suicidal in the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's heavily implied in the scene.
Right.
So, you know, like, that's definitely an old trope. I mean, I think I saw recently a Wikipedia article that was, like, creativity and mental illness or something like that. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was an interesting kind of... Because, I mean, it's like every one of these characters has, like, you know, a bit of their story that relates to, like the larger theme.
Right.
And definitely being creative and being an outcast or whatever. I mean, I'm so sure the Wachowskis are, like, super into that, you know, theme. If they're filmmakers, like, that's their thing, man.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's all we got for Riley, right?
Yeah. We don't have any scenes from her later, you know, it hints at a backstory to come. But we haven't gotten much of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I watched the first time, I kind of thought she was really... some of her issues were stemming from the traumatic experience she had in the first episode.
Right, yeah.
But then you start realizing around here that, oh, it stretches a lot farther back. Because, you know, she was suicidal in the past. And so... maybe we'll get something about that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because I would definitely be traumatized if I was involved in some kind of apartment shootout with friends after taking drugs. I mean, like, yeah.
I'm pretty sure she just, like, shook it off. She was like, okay, I'm good now.
Right? So, yeah, that's all we get from Riley in this episode.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to Nomi?
Yeah, sure. We don't get much from Nomi either.
Right. We have her, like, curled up in the chair saying, how can this possibly be legal in this day and age? Which I totally agree with. I kept thinking that, too, in episode 2. Like, how is she how can this be legal? How can she be held against her will in this hospital? Like, how?
I have no idea.
If I was her, I'd be, like, screaming, like, I do not consent to this procedure, like...
I don't think they would really care.
No, yeah, they clearly don't care. Like, she was, like, the nurse was like, yeah, I'm gonna, like... I've been authorized to use force, and, like, these police officers entered from behind her. I'm like, oh, gosh. But, I don't understand how that's legal at all. Although, I guess, point for the doctor for using her preferred name and using this, the gender pronouns that she wanted? Question mark? That's all I can really say. I mean, but other than that, I'm like, yeah, I don't know why this is happening to Nomi.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to for me to decide whether, like, the nurses and everyone kind of in the hospital are kind of in on it.
Right?
Like, they seem to not be.
Yeah.
And yet...
I'm listening. I'm just trying to read my notes while
you go through your thoughts. I don't know. It was just kind of confusing because, like... do the nurses really think that what they're doing is best for Nomi? I think it seems they do.
Yeah.
But, no. And what kind of medical background is this coming from then? I don't know.
Yeah, I completely agree. Everything I've seen in medicine, in my life, or other people's lives, like, you have to consent and sign papers and say that you could, like, you have to consent to the procedure. You can't just lobotomize someone without their consent. I mean, if they say no, I mean, and, okay, let's pretend, just like, for devil's advocate, let's say Nomi really does have a, I mean, you know, not the sensei thing. She does have a problem with her brain that is, you know, really bad, and she says no. Like, you're supposed to respect that and be like, even though I know that it would be better for you to do this procedure, like, she said no, you're not going to do it. I mean, I know there's the whole case where, oh, if they're, like, not mentally sound to make judgments, so, like, maybe that's what they're pulling off here. You know what, yeah. You know what I mean? But it's like, she's not, like, speaking in gibberish, and you did explain what's happening, and she's scared, but, like, it just seems, like, so crazy to me that they're like, oh, you know, like, let me tell you about this thing that's happening in your brain. Let me give you, like, a 1 minute rundown of what's happening, and let's do the surgery. No? Like,
yeah.
Maybe you want to sit down and explain for, like, an hour or 2 hours, like, maybe. But yeah. It just seems so crazy.
Right, because, like, we have, like, who I don't know if he has a name, but I've been calling Evil Doctor.
Not the Evil Doctor you saw in the beginning of the episode. Evil Doctor with the
2.0.
Something with it. His name was Metzger, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Metzger?
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. Actually, that sounds completely correct, yes. But Evil Doctor 2.0, as I affectionately refer to him. Like, I get that he's Evil Doctor. Like, that's who he is, and that's his prerogative, whatever. The nurses are the ones that just confound me.
Oh, yeah. Like, the nurses are the ones that, like, in real life, like, nurses are the ones that, like, catch doctors' screw-ups. That's literally what they do.
Yeah, I don't know. But we do get something from the beginning of the episode, actually, which we didn't really touch on, which is from Will. And when he is at the hospital, someone reports to him that his MRI is showing unusual brain activity.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And he was like, yeah, I'll bet.
sure. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really interesting how we start getting the paranoia and the distrust of authority with this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
like, Will being like, even though he's part of the establishment, that's like 2016's favorite word, he's part of the establishment and the police. He's starting to doubt things that are happening and, you know, do they gel with his moral code and what's supposed to be going on. And then already with Nomi, like, I know I'm getting part of this from, like, reading other people's reviews and things online, but, like, already as a trans person, you're probably, like, paranoid of crazy stuff happening to you. And, like, now crazy stuff is happening to her, where, like, people are literally trying to lobotomize her, and that's horrifying, you know?
Yeah, it's absolutely. Like,
and there's definitely, you know, there's some parallels to, like, how, and I guess I know I can't speak for trans people because I'm not trans, but, you know, I mean, I can understand there's an element of paranoia and suspicion because people are crazy and trying to take away your rights and trying to kill you. So, yeah, seeing that reflected on this, like, more intense sci-fi kind of level, I don't blame her for being paranoid and scared because there's some crazy stuff when your doctor's like, yeah, I'm going to take part of your brain out now. Have fun with that since you can't consent to this, you know? Ugh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Nomi gets strapped in and prepped for surgery.
Dun-dun-dun! Some lunatic sets fire to the business room.
Oh, who could it possibly be?
I don't know who it could be.
Let's get a flashback, just in case the viewers don't remember.
I love her so much.
Amanita's great. Yeah. I mean, I'm really... She just becomes, like we were talking about earlier in our previous episodes, she becomes more of a fleshed-out character and more compelling character. Like, it's really nice to see her dedication and devotion to Nomi and, you know, how far she's willing to go. Like, she's gonna burn down this hospital. Like, literally burn it down.
Yeah.
Which was a great moment.
I do not recommend that to other people. Burning down hospitals. not generally something that we can condone, but in this one exception, we'll
make an exception for this one.
Yes. That's okay.
Yeah. So, I think that's all we get from Nomi this episode, right? Shall we move on to Lido?
Yes. Lido.
The comic relief up until, I guess this episode, he's in more of a pickle than he was before, so it's a little more serious than his previous episodes.
But a little bit.
A little.
But just a tad. I enjoy Lido and his storylines so much.
Yeah, he is one of the more lighter storylines in this series. Oh my gosh, it's just the whole banter between him and the boyfriend, and the banter between the boyfriend and Daniela is
it's so superb. Good.
It is superb, and just them just looking at each other drinking their coffee that's been laced with alcohol. Just so good.
So good.
It's so great. I don't know how I feel about Daniela, though, because...
She's trouble with a capital T.
Right? I mean, you already knew that before you get all this information about, I slept with so-and-so's best friend, and my dad imports and exports
things.
Okay, I've seen enough Breaking Bad to know where this is going. and while this is a horrible stereotype, Donald Trump level stereotypes, if you're importing and exporting things from Mexico to the U.S.,
but okay. Anyway, so we
so that was a thing.
We have Hernando, and they're watching this movie where Lido was a doctor.
Yeah,
and it's just so cute.
The soap opera, man.
Yeah. And the thing that I really like about Daniela is that she is, such a shipper.
Yeah.
She's, Tumblr levels of shipping, but, in real life.
Obnoxious.
I feel like but it's almost commentary it on shipping. I don't know if this it is.
But yeah, it's true. Yeah, she basically is Tumblr, isn't she?
Yeah.
You know, Tumblr with, a drug-dealing dad, I guess. But
don't we all have those?
What?
What?
You have a drug-dealing dad, Melissa?
Anyway. Okay.
But yeah, I guess I could see that as a commentary on shipping. That's pretty funny. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think, with the boyfriend, I just feel so bad for him, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of he rehearses all these lines with him, and, he's doing his little lip sync.
Yeah. Thing,
and it's just it's so subtly heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I'm just man.
It's a hard life.
Yeah. I must say, I don't know if you have anything to say about the opening scene with them inside Lido's home, but later on when they're at the restaurant kind of talking about, I don't know, why'd you pick me to be your beard and blah, blah, blah. I was just I know Lido was, kind of looking around the cafe or the restaurant, but I was wow, after the paparazzi came right for them and tried to take pictures, I was wow, that was really risky for them to just be, talking about that stuff in the open. And it's not like other people can't hear them, so I was okay. The lighting in that restaurant was superb, though. I love the colors and the lighting in that scene. They were so nice. But yeah, I was just dude, why are you talking about this right now? You could talk about this in the safety of your home, so...
Yeah. I really like the relationship between Hernando and Daniela. That's one of my favorite interplays in the whole show.
It's so comical.
It's very comical, and it just completely turns your expectations upside down.
Right.
Because, you expect them to constantly be at each other's throat. And yeah. they're... they're kind of not. They're kind of, like, bonding over, like, Leto and how annoying he is.
It's so great, though, because Leto is such, like, I don't know, something about him. He's so...
He takes himself really seriously. I don't know if that's what you're getting at.
Yeah, I think that is. Like, he just seems so, I don't know, unaware.
Yeah.
Is quite what I'm going for, but, like... Yeah, I think taking himself too seriously definitely makes you go, chill out, bro. Like, what are you doing? He's just, yeah, it's really funny. Like, it's just, like, the whole, his whole, so far it's been very, like, farcical.
Yeah.
The whole, like, his whole storyline. But, yeah, what with, was it Joaquin who, like, threatened him with the knife? And I was just like, you got a problem now, man. You got a problem you gotta fix.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know if you remember this, but, like, there's, like, this moment where she's explaining that, yeah, like, she effed Joaquin's best friend, blah, blah, blah. And she's just, like, drinking the mug. No, sorry. And Nando is just drinking the mug, like, but that's none of my business, though.
Kermit style?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was just like, but and now it is your business because that dude just got up in your face during your lunch date and, like, put a knife against your throat. It's just a hobby of mine. All right, dude.
Okay, nobody believes that.
If your hobby is killing human beings,
Yeah.
No. All right.
I really liked that, the shot where they're focused on his shoes. I don't know if you remember this.
His shoes. But, like, when he's doing the scene?
When he's going back to the set, it's, like, it transitions into the set. Scene, and it's just, like, it's on his shoes, and I don't know, it's just really, like, it's, like, a weird angle.
Okay.
I don't know, that, I just really like weird angles. That's just a personal
choice. Weird angles are good
when
used in
moderation. Yes.
Yes.
Not
so there was
too
a weird
much.
Angle on his shoes. I don't really remember it, but...
I don't know.
I think I was distracted by that crazy gold gun he was carrying.
Nice.
Like, what in the world? And I was also trying to place what was happening, because, you know, they switch around from world to world, so I was like, oh, we're back to Leto now, because I see, like, the woman in the nun costume running around. and I was like, okay.
Yeah. And then Leto actually has a moment where he switches with Riley. And then
right.
It just, like, I love, like, these little moments where they're just completely taken out of their lives and everything just gets confusing.
Right.
Like, that's, it was just, it's great. It makes me wonder, and I have not looked at this at all, but I wonder if there's, like, some fan chart where they, like, charted all of the different switches and, like, all of the relationships, like, as they form throughout each of the episodes, like, how people keep getting skills and memory, not memories, but, you know, switching places. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, I really hate this because I did watch it out of order, but I started feeling that out of these eight people, there are certain, like, pairings.
Yes.
That are very strong. So, and I guess... It's a little bit apparent. It's apparent here. But again, I watched it out of order. So, like, in episode 4, I was like, there's clearly a tie between Cassius and Sunbok.
Right.
Like, that's a very strong tie compared to, I guess, the other characters. And then same thing with, like, Wolfgang and Kala. There's definitely, like, a stronger connection there with those two.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out, like, what the pairs are. I guess, yeah, no, some people are more, like, Will is kind of more connected to everyone.
Yeah.
But
he does...
Like, there seem to be pairs going on, you know?
Yeah, but remember he had a conversation with Riley, and that's, like, the first interaction.
Okay.
Like, between them where they're actually talking.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. But I just don't see, like, the same connections with their, like, story, and...
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I mean, we can get more into that when we start talking about Cassius's...
Yeah.
Plot line in this episode.
Yeah.
But there seems to be, like, I don't know. It's also, like, screen time, how often they switch with each other, and things like that.
Yeah.
Too.
But, so, we're back to Leto, and there's the line, actors are just good liars. I don't know. That just really, I feel like it's so self-aware and shows where they have actors in them, just like, you know, books where there are, like, the characters are authors, or it just, there's always this self-awareness within media of the creators and the people that make the art possible, and they always like to focus on them because everyone is basically self-indulgent, and that is just who we are as people, and it's just how it is. I don't know. I feel like maybe I'm getting a little sick of the that kind of approach, but whatever. I mean, right. I guess it works. And I guess I like that it gives an interesting way to transition in and out of Leto's scenes.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. Like, the whole, you know, actors are just liars. And, like, it reminds me of, like, the Neil Gaiman quote that, like, writers are just liars. Like, you're spinning a tale. You're making a story. Like, yeah. And, again, it's also, like, the write what you know thing. That's why everyone writes about New York or L.A., because that's literally where filmmakers or directors or writers live. They live in New York or L.A. So, yeah, it's, like, write what you know, and also, let's be self-indulgent. Yay!
Basically. But they're, it's Leto, and he meets Joaquin, and mm-hmm. they're eating lunch together on this absolutely beautiful restaurant set, balcony.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh.
No, I mean, they're having, they're, it's like crafty, so I definitely saw other crew members and other people eating there, so I wasn't gonna shank him right there, then and there. That would have been
no,
bad,
no, no, but I just, like, when they were overlooking, like, the plaza or whatever, like, that's so yeah. pretty,
oh,
man.
It was such a gorgeous shot.
Oh, my gosh.
All the effort put into this show, man.
There's so
it pays
much.
Off so well.
But.
It looks so great.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's all for Leto?
Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, Joaquin seems to know how to kill people.
he seems to know how to kill people. Just a little.
Yeah. And, like, but he also seems to have a bit of a man crush on Leto.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. He was like, if I was a girl, I'd sleep with you. And he was like, too bad I'm gay. This is awkward now. Whatever.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Anyway, but.
Oh, Leto. He's such an awkward little.
Panda. I don't know why I called him a panda.
I'm gonna call him a panda, but he's something.
He's an awkward little something.
All right.
And it
is
ends,
that all for Leto?
It ends with, sooner or later, we all have to pay.
Is it bad that I rolled my eyes when he said that?
Like, okay, bro, you've been watching too many of the cheesy, you know, movies or
soap
TV
operas,
shows or whatever.
Right? Oh, Leto. Maybe there'll be one scene in the future where he pulls out that golden gun and actually has to shoot someone like Joaquin, like, Cafia's style later in this episode. That'd be amusing. But anyway.
Cafia's?
Yeah. Cafia's, he's the last one. So let's finish off with his little plot line.
Absolutely. Well, we get a little bit of little Cafia's, where
yes.
he wanted to be a zebra.
I think you mean zebra.
Zebra, okay. He was so cute.
I laugh
when oh my
zebra.
Gosh.
Oh, they were so, he was so adorable. And I love his mom's dress. Did you see your dress?
I mean, I did see it, but I don't remember.
Beautiful. It was a beautiful dress. But yeah, he's like, I want to be a zebra. I can eat.
Yeah, you eat grass and not be hungry. And I'm like, that's so sad.
And have friends. I was like, no.
Stop, you're making me sad.
Dude has a point, though. You get to eat grass and have your friends around. But also you get killed by a lion, so that's bad, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, who's really the, like, who are the lions in this episode? I would say the, you know, the people who are stealing all of his money and whatever and, you know, hijacking the bus, the Van Damme bus.
Yeah.
But.
So, Cafia's gets medicine for his sick mother.
Dude, that was a scary scene. Like, when they started entering that neighborhood, like, I know it's acting and direction, but it was all very good. Like, how they just pass by, and there's just that group on the right side that's all just, they're all just staring at them as they pass by. I even noticed when they were talking to the literal drug dealer, when they're talking to him, Mr. F Off, you know, they cut to like a wider shot of Cafius and his friend, and you can see there's even people in the background sitting on top of a roof that appear to be looking at in their direction. Like, that was some scary stuff right there. Like, they were, I mean, if they tried anything, they weren't gonna get out alive. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, so that, I really liked the attention to detail in that scene, and just, I don't know, it was pretty intense.
It was, definitely. So the gangsters, I guess, they find the drugs, which Kaffee's hid, and...
All right, yeah, we're skipping forward to when they're driving the bus.
Right, so they're driving the bus, and they get they're going through like a bad area.
Bad area, yeah.
They stop.
Dude, anytime someone's like, why are we going through this bad area? No, it'll be okay.
It's never look
that,
okay.
Look at that, you know, young pretty girl who's clearly the bait for our trap. Bro.
It couldn't be.
And it was just so... I mean, you... And for me, as a viewer, like, you were simultaneously, like, hopeful, like, maybe it won't be a trap. But then you're simultaneously, like,
it has to be
a trap. Because, like, in that bright, light blue dress, it was like a beacon or something. Like, come over here! What's the word? Naive bus driver, you know what I mean? Like, oh, dear.
It's like one of those instances where, like, we know what's gonna happen because we're, you know, we watch a lot of... Well, not that we, Maggie and I, but just as viewers, we know what's going to happen because we know the tropes. We know how this is going to end.
Even the best friend knew the tropes. He was like, yeah, no.
But just don't do it. Don't do it, kids.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it all works out in the end. But we'll get to that.
Oh, sorry. I was going through my notes and I realized there was one quick thing I forgot to mention, which was when Joaquin kind of draws that knife over Leto's throat, kind of had a Into the Badlands flashback of Quinn sliding that sword over Sunny's jacket because it had that shing sound effect. So I had a little laugh at that. But yeah, back to Cafia. So they're on the bus getting bus jacked or whatever, extorted.
Yeah, I don't know the proper terminology.
Anyway, yeah, so they get, you know, all their valuables stolen by gangsters with like really bad teeth, I guess. And
bad
you know,
teeth
the old
gangsters.
They focus on the really bad teeth. I don't know if this would be indicative of, like, drug use or something else. But they then you see, you know, the poor old lady in the back of the bus being harassed by this guy who takes her husband of 40 years ring. And it's all horrible. And, you know, he literally has his pants on the ground and is, like, crying in the dirt. And it's horrible. You know, the two cars, like, that one red car and the, what, sedan with the... I don't know, gangsters in it, they just run off.
Yeah.
In victory, for now.
For now.
and then we really get that great scene where Cafius is like, no, screw this. I'm going after them. Anyone who wants to stay with me can stay on the bus. And also, best friend, you have to go because I'm not risking your life.
Yeah.
And then he rides off into the dust like a boss.
And with the old lady.
With the old lady cheering him on. And there's an epic throwdown. Because one, you need the old lady because... Because I was thinking this, right? You need the old lady because you need a spectator who can report on what happened.
Yeah.
You also need someone who's going to stay in the bus and not start fighting other people with Cafius.
Right.
And it also ties in with the... To me, she kind of ties in with Sunbok's story. How Sunbok has this older... guy who's kind of encouraging her. Not that the old lady was really encouraging him, but you know, she was also... Yeah,
she wasn't coaching him, but she was, like, emotional support.
Yeah, she was also there with him, so I thought that was a nice parallel with, like,
I didn't catch that.
Older people, like, with these two younger people. And also, we need to cut back to the old woman for, like, one reaction shot, which they did. I was like, yeah, I see you. I see you in your reaction shot. Cinema major. Anyway, moving on. So, yeah, they have... Caffeus finds the sedan first. Because that's the one... There's the red car leading the way. Then there's a sedan. And then Caffeus is right behind them in the Van Damme van. And I loved how the van had, you know, those eyes painted on the front. Mm-hmm. And when it was coming, it was charging towards that sedan. It looked so great. Because you see these angry eyes just, like... Full speed ahead, slamming into that little sedan, and it was such a great shot. I loved it so much. That was, like, a really good choice, and, like, it just looked really cool. Yeah. I don't know if you felt that. I was excited for this chase scene, man.
No, it was great.
Because it was so well shot, it was so well cut together, and that was, like, right when I saw that shot with, like, the van bearing down that little car with the angry eye, I was like, this is perfection. This is only gonna get better from here on out. Which it did.
Right. So...
Do you have anything to add before I keep, you know, raving on about this?
So this part is intercut with Sun Bok's fight. So, like, they're mm-hmm. building this fight up. Like, she's just, getting ready. And, like, I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is gonna be amazing. And then... Right? Your heart is just, like, oh, my, going crazy because...
Yeah, dude, my heart was, like, oh, my God, all the adrenaline.
Yeah.
And, like, yes. And you felt it, too, right? Like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
It was, like, so well done. And, you know, we have this shot where she's making her way through the crowd. Sunbok's making her way through the crowd. And, like, you have all these, like, crazy people dressed in these glowing costumes. I was, like, wow, I'm getting a really big Tron vibe right now. Even though I've never seen Tron, I was like, everyone's glowing in the dark. And then, like, the MC is, like, hyping the crowd. And, like, oh, like, the tension's just ratcheting up. And so she starts fighting with the guy. And I already talked briefly about her fighting style, right? With, like, her waiting to see and then reacting.
And she also, like, uses the other guy's strength against him.
Yes.
Like, it's, like, that fighting style. I don't know if there's a name for it, but it's good and it's awesome and I want to know.
Yeah. And this is funny, and this is like, just, like, the most nitpicky, like, just ignore me type aside.
Okay,
but
I do.
Thanks. But, like, you know, like a woman's center of gravity is different, in a different position than a man's center of gravity?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So, like, a guy's center of gravity is, like, higher.
Right.
So that's why, like, it's easier to push guys over. Because like, they just literally just fall down. But, like, it's hard to push a woman over.
Are you saying that guys are pushovers?
No, but, like, literally they are. But, you know, like, a woman's center of gravity is lower, so they have more balance and stuff like that. So I was like, it's funny how, I mean, I know, like, the transferring skills. But, like, I'm like, does Caffeus just have, like, the center of gravity of a woman? Because he can just do, like, flips and ish. Because, like, I'm like, how is he, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's just me nitpicking like crazy. And, like, it's... I don't care. It doesn't really matter. What matters is that, you know, Caffeus did some awesome fighting in front of these people in this bad neighborhood, and he gets some business. Yay. Okay. Sorry. Spoiler for the next episode. Okay. Cut that out. Okay. But yeah, no, what's awesome is that, like, Caffeus is, like, able to use Sunbok fighting and, like, kick the crap out of everyone who he comes into contact with.
Like a boss.
Which was wonderful. Like a boss. And the old woman's like, yes, you know, again, gotta have that reaction shot.
Yeah.
Because who cares about the nameless crowd in the background?
Right. But we also get a moment where Caffeus actually switches with Will.
Yes, we do.
Where he's at a gun range, whatever.
Right.
Something. Right. Like
that. And he's shooting.
Yeah, and he's shooting, and they're firing the shots, like, together.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Did that even work, though? I feel like Caffeus shot at the truck, but I don't know if anyone died or was injured or was stopped. Did it do anything?
I thought he shot at the wheels, but I actually...
Okay.
I honestly don't remember. I watched this a week ago.
Okay. I watched it yesterday, but because it was so fast, like, you know, fast-paced, and the way it was cut together, I was a little bit, like, confusing. Unsure of what happened. I mean, that's a show, but it's, like, a good kind of confusing. Not, like, a bad kind of confusing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a good thing. It's... I like it.
No, yeah, no, I like it. I just think, like, back to shows that are, like, not good confusing would be kind of, like, Into the Badlands. That's, like, not... that's, like, a bad kind of confusion. But this show is, like, a good kind of confusion because we're still figuring it out alongside the characters, you know?
Yeah,
because
they're confused, we're confused. It's just a big, confused mess, but in a good way.
And then we still have a general idea of what's...
Yeah.
What's to come. And, yeah, I don't know if I have any more notes about this episode. I mean, there does seem to be a recurrent theme of, like, the Sentience can kind of call on someone by being like, help me! And then, like, then they just gain these awesome skills, like, you know, kickboxing and gun shooting and things like that.
Here's a question.
Sure.
Like, are they able to learn new skills, or is it more like they're borrowing the skills? Like, they're kind of switching places where they're, you know, like in their heads, they're at different kind of, like, you know, they're more switching than Cassius has become a good fighter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's unclear in this episode, and I think we learn more about it in the future. I think I'm going to say they are borrowing, but I don't know. It's too early to tell, because this is only episode 3.
Yeah.
You know? So, we'll see in the future episodes how that plays out, if they are really able to retain and learn from the other Sensates.
Yeah.
But I think for now, I think it's more borrowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say this. When I watched this the first time, this episode, episode 3... was the one where I got invested.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I thought, oh, I'm going to finish this show, aren't I? You know? Like, the other episodes were good, and it's not like I didn't like them, but this one is the one where I thought, okay, this is a good show. I want to keep going.
Yeah.
I think it really kind of came together, especially in the last scene. Like, the last scene is exactly what I wanted, where, you know, they're fighting and they're switching places and everything's kind of coming together. And it's like you finally kind of get to see the potential of the show that you've been watching.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you can imagine, you know, oh, there's all these different possibilities. But, you know, potential can only take you so far. And so now you actually get to see it. And it's just, this is what the show could be. And
it's phenomenal. Yeah. That last scene when they're intercutting between, like, Cassius's, like, you know, survival fight and, you know, Sunbox throwdown was so masterful. It was so good. So, yeah, I'm really excited. And I can definitely, I think if I watch it in the right order, yeah, I think this would also have been the episode that really hooked me in. I mean, I'm definitely excited to finish this show. You know, this is like a quarter through. So, I just can't wait for everyone to finally know what's going on, be, like, more or less on the same page, and, like, I don't know, do awesomer things.
And according to, I think I mentioned this in a previous episode, but according to Netflix data, if you made it to, I think, the end of episode 3 or something, there was a 70% chance that you would finish the show. Like, they, like, this is, like, the turning point episode, kind of, and, like,
it's where it gets good.
It's where it gets good. I totally get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember I looked at that chart a while back, and it was like, basically, they came to the conclusion, there's no show where, like, people get hooked on the first episode. Like, they have to watch, like, you know, and it varies for what show it is, but they have to watch, like, 2, 3, 6 episodes before they get really into it. Yeah. So, I mean, by the end of it, my heart was racing. I finished the show at around 11 last night, and I was like, oh my god, how am I going to be able to go to sleep because my heart's racing so much? And, like, I feel so unfulfilled, but it was funny because I had seen the next episode, I already knew what was going to happen. In that episode, I thought the way that ended was very fulfilling compared to the way this one ended. But I guess it's the perils of Netflix, you know? Like, it's meant to be binge-watched in, like, chunks, I guess. So...
I feel like...
Yeah, they ended this episode making you think, oh, I gotta see the next one.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, this is definitely, like, if you were supposed to watch it in chunks, this is, like, the middle of the chunk, you know?
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. And sometimes I wish there was kind of, like, a viewing guide like that, where they would break up shows into good, you know, bingeable, but still not, like, watching the whole thing through chunks. Because I know when I binge watch shows, even shows that aren't Netflix shows, I sometimes see patterns. Like, oh, it seems like everything's rising and then falling, you know, over a span of, like, 3 or 4 episodes. And you can kind of watch them in chunks like that, and it becomes a lot more satisfying. But you don't know that until you watched them.
Right. I would say if I were going to watch Sensei in, like, I guess chunks of episodes, I'd probably... I can't remember if episode 2 ended with a kind of resolution, but definitely there's, like, more of a feeling of resolution in episode 4.
Right.
Like, not with this episode. No. This episode, I was like... This was rising action.
Right.
Where's the fall? Or where's, like, the kind of conclusion sense of, like, closure? And I didn't really get that until next episode ending. So, yeah, I think that's all my notes for episode 3. You have any more things that you want to discuss?
Nope, that's it for me.
Okay. So, remember to, you know, rate us and leave reviews for us on iTunes. That really would help us. Like us, follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter. You can also email us your suggestions for what we should watch next at our sfincolor@gmail.com email address. That's all for me. I'll see you next episode.
Bye-bye.